Hello, this is Pennsylvania State Senator Gene Yaw of the 23rd Senate District, and I want to welcome you to this special telephone town hall meeting on heroin and opioid addiction. We are calling you live from the State Capitol building in Harrisburg to discuss this very important subject, something that has touched each and every one of us, whether personally, professionally, or from an economic perspective. This is the second in a series of telephone town halls that your legislators will be having in order to bring the issue of heroin and opioid addiction to you. To ask a question at any time during this call, be sure to press *3 on your phone. These telephone town halls are extremely important because they offer you and your elected officials a direct line of communication. Tonight, we have assembled a panel of experts who are joining me in the studio to discuss this growing epidemic. As I said, tonight's telephone town hall is unique in that it will focus on one key subject area, heroin and opioid addiction in the Southwest region of Pennsylvania. Tonight's telephone town hall is being sponsored by your area state senators that include Senator John Eichelberger, Senator Guy Reichensaller, Senator Camara Bartolotta, Senator Pat Stefano, Senator Elder Vogel, Senator Kim Ward, and Senator Randy Volokovich. This town hall will also let you listen in, offer your opinions, and even ask questions from your own home. Once again, to ask a question at any time during this call, be sure to press *3 on your phone. Recent reports indicate that 80% of heroin addicts trace their addiction back to prescription drugs. Further, a Center for Disease Control and Prevention Vital Signs report confirmed that healthcare providers wrote 259 million prescriptions for painkillers in 2012. That's enough for every adult in the U.S. to have a bottle of prescription painkillers. Since 2014, the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, a legislative research agency of the General Assembly, of which I serve as chairman, has conducted 11 public hearings in the heroin epidemic arena, which has now taken center stage on the local, state, and national levels. In Pennsylvania, we lose 10 people per day to drug overdoses. In the United States, we're losing 1,000 people per week. Before we meet our panel of experts, joining me in the studio, I'd like to introduce our sponsors of tonight's Telephone Town Hall event who represent you across southwestern Pennsylvania. First, I'd like to welcome Senator John Eichelberger, who represents Blair, Cumberland, Franklin, Fulton, and Huntington counties. John, do you have any comments?
Thanks, Gene. It's very nice to have your expertise involved with this effort. I know the 2 years' worth of hearings you've held across the Commonwealth unveiled a lot of critical information that we're going to use to act appropriately to address the situation. We've already done a number of things for the folks out there. A lot of bills have been introduced. Some have been passed. We have a lot more on the agenda. As Gene Yaw has told us in caucus and as we've discussed this issue, this is a long-term plan that we will have to address this problem. There's no simple overnight answers for this. But we, first of all, I think acknowledge that it is a real crisis. When I look at counties I represent, like Franklin, where there's 30 overdose deaths so far this year alone, in Blair County, we had 38 last year, and we're on track this year to have more than that. In Fulton County, that has less than 15,000 people, we have 8 overdose deaths so far this year. So even in very rural areas, as well as urban areas, this problem is just touching the lives of everyone in our community. So I'm very thankful for the efforts that are being made, and I'll be doing my part to help, and I know working with constituents to gain more information and insight and work with my colleagues to get it done. So look forward to all of us working together, and thank all the folks that are on the call tonight.
John, you're absolutely correct. I mean, this is a problem that touches everybody without exception. There's no one is immune from it. So I really appreciate you taking the time to call in and be a sponsor of this event. So thank you very much. Next on the line, we have Senator Camara Bartolotta, who represents Beaver, Green, and Washington counties. Camara?
Good evening. Yes, thank you so very much, Senator Yaw, for doing this. This epidemic has, like you just said, has touched thousands and thousands of people across the whole country. But, you know, we're concerned here in Pennsylvania, especially southwestern PA, and you've got my very dear friend there, my district attorney, Gene Vitone, who really has got so much vital information. I know you're all going to be sharing that with him tonight, and he's going to be sharing a lot of issues with everyone on the call. But Washington County, the county seat, the center of my district, we made national news. The Wall Street Journal, basically, the Washington Post said, you know, one county, 70 minutes, eight overdoses. And this is just not a whole bunch of kids out having a good time. This affects every age range, every economic position, every race, every, you know, men, women, young, old, everything. And I'm very, very proud of the work that you've done, Senator Yaw, with all of the tours that you've done across the whole state, all of the information, all the hundreds of people you've spoken with, all of the hours of testimony. And I'm very proud that we're looking at this issue from a legislative standpoint. There's lots of different bills out there that we're going to hopefully get across the finish line in the next 6 days of session that can curb this epidemic. But you know what? I'm urging the people that are listening right now, don't wait for legislation. There are things that you can do right now. Pay attention to where your kids are going, who they're hanging out with. You know, if you've got an older adult child that seems to be having issues going to work, maintaining relationships, try to get them some help. And for the love of Pete, let's lock up our medicine cabinets. We used to be locking up the liquor cabinet. Let's lock up the medicine cabinet. And if you've got any kind of opioids or addictive medications laying around the house, please contact your local police department. Please contact any authority where you can go and take those drugs and have them disposed of properly. There's just too many things that can go wrong by having addictive opioids in your home unguarded. So there's a lot of issues you're going to talk about tonight. I'm very proud to be part of it. And I know that with the legislature, with the community, with our district attorneys, with our law enforcement, we're, you know, all hands are on deck to tackle this issue. And I just thank you for having this telephone town hall.
Next on the line, we have Senator Elder Vogel, who represents Beaver, Butler, and Lawrence counties. Elder, are you there?
Yeah, Gene, I'm here. Thank you for having us here this evening. Appreciate it being on with you this evening.
Well, I want to thank you for being a sponsor. And do you have any comments that you'd like to make as preliminary before we start?
Yeah, Gene, I would just like to thank you for hosting this event again. These teletown halls, I believe, are very important for the listeners here in our region here in southwestern Pennsylvania to be able to interact with officials and government officials and people with the drug industry, just to be able to get answers to questions and find out how things are going here in Pennsylvania. I know the epidemic is huge in Beaver and Lawrence counties. We just had a huge drug bust in Beaver County that took out 75 drug dealers a couple weeks ago. It was a six-month operation between the Attorney General's office and our district attorney. We hope that sort of kind of helps put a dent in the drug traffic here in our area, but we know right here in southwestern Pennsylvania, we're in a, I guess it's called a drug corridor. It comes out of Ohio and goes toward Pittsburgh and on out across the center part of the state. So it's really a tough area for us to be able to constantly battling the drugs with. A lot of them come out of Ohio and things like that. And also, they're cutting a lot of the heroin with more powerful opioids. A lot of it is already laced with fentanyl and things like that, which is 10,000 more times powerful, you know, than heroin and stuff like that. I mean, it's obviously, it's very, very deadly, and it's a full-blown crisis here in our state. We definitely need to do all we can as legislators and as everyone else, public officials, to try and get a handle on this situation and raise awareness to it. And I want to thank you for hosting these town halls and for everyone that's going to get on and discuss the issue here tonight. And I want to thank you for once again for raising the issue, and I look forward to hearing what people have to say this evening. So thank you.
Thank you for being a host of this program. And next on the phone, we have Senator Randy Volokovich, who represents Allegheny County. Randy, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. I'd just like to say hello to everyone. This is Senator Randy Volokovich, and special thanks to you, Senator Yaw, for putting this call together, and I hope everyone on the call is learning something new. Look, Elder, Senator Vogel, really, I don't want to repeat all the things he said. Well said by Senator Vogel, but I will just, I'll sum it up a little different way. I was a former DARE officer, and we work with the kids on the drug issues. And I spent years educating, our youth about the dangers of drugs. And through this experience, I know it takes cooperation between our schools and the families, doctors, police, and the entire community to solve this problem. And it's not going to be solved overnight. And we're making some strides, and we're putting some bills together. So that so much more needs to be done. And I believe that law enforcement is going to be a very big part of reducing the problem of opioid addiction in our communities. And while we certainly need to do a better job of treating those who fall victim to drug addictions, and especially try to catch them at an early age, we also need to be able identifying and locking up some of these drug dealers. Because I can think of no other group of people who do more harm to our communities than drug dealers. And just as there are destructive people in the community, there are many more constructive people, as well as, namely those of you on this call who are interested in fixing this problem. And I'm very interested in hearing the thoughts today. It's going to take everybody's going to have to be involved, everyone, the doctors and law enforcement, teachers, and move past some of the territorialism sometimes we have in protecting our turf and with piece of legislation to focus on how, we treat and ultimately prevent this dangerous drug addiction. So, Senator Yaw, once again, I wholeheartedly thank you for taking on this challenge, and you're doing a great job, and so just look forward to working in the future with you on this.
Well, thank you. And once again, I would remind people to dial *3 to participate in this call. And I would like to thank again our sponsors tonight, who are Senator John Eichelberger, Senator Guy Reichensaller, Senator Cameron Bartolotta, Senator Pat Stefano, Senator Elder Vogel, Senator Kim Ward, and Senator Randy Volokovich. Thanks to them for allowing us to do this telephone town hall. With me in the studio to discuss the subject of heroin and opioid addiction, it's an epidemic in our state, are our special guests for tonight, Barry Dank, who's the director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, and Dr. Nancy Falvo, a professor of nursing at Clarion University, and Gene Vitone, the district attorney of Washington County. The first question we have is from Beaver County. We have Cindy. What's your question?
What is a person to do who needs their medication that doctors can no longer write?
Thank you for your question. I asked Dr. Falvo if she can answer that question.
Pain control is one of the key issues here, and by no means are we looking at taking away pain medication for individuals who do need that. There are a lot of medications and alternative methods that can be tried. If your physician feels that you no longer need the medication, there are other avenues that you can go to, and perhaps he or she would be able to recommend some of those to you. But the controls are in place so that you don't run into a problem where a medication that you have been taking for a long period of time is no longer effective.
Thank you. We have Tina on the phone from Franklin County. Tina, what's your question?
I have been calling in about a local drug dealer in Huntington County for over 2 years, calling state police, calling drug task force. Nothing's being done. And the community's getting, you know, fed up. We're disgusted. Somebody, a kid's going to die or there's going to be an overdose. So what, I mean, if it's the community's next step as to helping out, what do we do when nothing's getting done?
Okay. I'm going to thank you for your question. I'm going to ask District Attorney Vitone to comment on that question.
Hi, Tina. I run into that pretty frequently also, and I can understand your frustration. Have you contacted your local district attorney? I would suggest that that might be a good place to go. A lot of times there's things going on. When we receive a report, we can't just go in and bust down a door. We have to develop probable cause and search warrants, and you have to go about it the right way. But you may want to touch base with your local district attorney. I know I have a hotline in Washington County that people report in on, and that would be what I would recommend to you. And good luck.
We have Mary Ann on the line from Washington County. Mary Ann, what's your question?
So I'd like to know why it seems that as the mental community has, I'm a nurse, and as the mental community has come forward with this as a disease and what we're doing with it, the law enforcement has it. If they put these restrictions, they take a driver's license, they require you to work, they require you to report to a probation officer 3 or 4 times a week, which is hard to keep a job and get a job as a felon to begin with, and then they throw you back in jail. When you're trying to do everything right, or you miss an appointment, or you do, and every appointment for a probation is drug testing, they throw you back in jail. It's almost like this system is set up for failure. They set you up to fail. You can't get a job because you're a felon. You don't have a driver's license, so you either have to live in the city, where all the drugs are, and trying to find a job and then get to where you, what employer is going to go, oh, sure, you can have a job, but you got to be gone two or three days out of the week for 2 or 3 hours. They don't want that.
Okay. Thank you. We could probably talk about that particular problem all night long. I'll try and just give you a little bit of an answer, and I'll ask the district attorney also. I think that things are changing. I think that law enforcement in general is looking at this as that we cannot arrest our way out of the problem. We can't put everybody in jail. It's unfortunate we're in that position, but I think that law enforcement is becoming more and more a partner in that we need to treat these people or find treatment programs, and that this is a disease. It's not a mental failure or something.
Yeah, Senator Yaws hit the nail on the head. It has resulted in a change in how we approach people that have addiction issues. We just don't have jail capacity to incarcerate everybody that's addicted, nor would you want to. They would just simply become better criminals. So what we have is we have diversion programs like the drug court in Washington County. We try to refer people over to drug and alcohol, and we try to make a distinction between a nonviolent offender who's addicted and somebody that's a drug dealer that's operating solely on greed and bringing this poison into our communities.
We received an online question from Melissa, and the question is, how do I know if someone in my family is addicted to heroin? And I'm going to ask Dr. Falvo to address that question.
Thank you. We do get this question a lot, and please keep in mind that I can give you a list of some of the behaviors and symptoms that you'll see, but you should not take these in isolation. It's really an overall picture that you have of that individual. You're going to be seeing some significant behavioral and personality changes. The individual may have increased mood swings, perhaps increased complaints of pain, illness. The individual begins to isolate himself or herself from family and friends and actually has new or different friends. Changes in overall lifestyle, such as missing school, missing work, not attending social events that they frequently attended before. There's also a decline in personal hygiene. You will see changes in their eating habits, perhaps eating too much or eating too little, and the general physical appearance and sleep patterns also change. The individuals may also have periods of confusion or being disoriented and actually nodding off when they're in your presence. And finally, you will most likely begin to see some deceitful or illegal behavior. You may find some of your valuables are missing, medications are missing. The individual may begin asking to borrow money from you. So please think of all of those together, not, again, individual symptoms.
We have Tina on the line from Huntington County. Tina?
Hi, thank you so much for calling me and allowing me to participate. I actually would like to make a comment. I had an opiate-addicted son who beat his addiction for 4 years, and unfortunately for him, after a trigger, he took 2 pills and it killed him. My question is primarily, one, is there any way we can start looking at the way we're prescribing the younger children? I know the Adderall, the Ritalin, all of those type of drugs. I've been doing a lot of reading, and I'm seeing that the majority of your addicts have been put on these drugs as young children. I mean, back when I was a kid, we didn't take pills. But another thing, in Huntington County, you see how they blast the photos in the paper of those selling drugs. And then a couple days later, as I've heard, they're back out on the streets. Why can't we have these dealers that are constantly being arrested? And I understand the jail situation. My husband is a prison guard. But why can't we charge them with conspiracy to commit murder, attempted murder? And if somebody overdoses and they can find out who gave it to them, murder. I mean, that's a capital charge.
Thank you. Your question has multiple parts to it. One of the things is that unfortunately, a lot of the street dealers and things that are going on, the problem is much larger than the street dealers. And we are being bombarded with a marketing that's comparable to any major retailer. I mean, that's not an excuse for it, but that's what's happening. Now, with respect to the criminal charge, I know that we've heard that before, and I'd ask the district attorney, Vitone, to talk about that.
Tina, first, I'm sorry for the loss of your son. That's a horrible thing to go through, and I can't even begin to tell you how sorry I am about that. With respect to the charges, you raise a point, and that's a frustration I feel as a district attorney, and it's something we're working with the legislature on. In fact, Senator Bartolotta has just introduced a bill for drug delivery resulting in serious bodily injury, which would cover somebody that provides drugs to somebody that overdoses. So I'm hopeful that that'll be something that can help us possibly getting some severe sanctions for people that are dealing in heroin and opioids. We would love to see some of those stricter sentences come in for the people that are dealing for greed. But thank you for your question.
We have Gary on the line from Franklin County. Gary, what's your question?
My question was, how much does a dose of Narcan cost?
Thank you. Barry?
The price varies depending on how it's provided to somebody. The auto injector can cost upwards of a couple hundred dollars, but the nasal spray is about $35. If you have private insurance, We understand the private insurance does cover that with a prescription. Also, though, if law enforcement or EMS individuals who stock that and provide it, they are able to get it through some funding that's made available from various sources. Some foundations have provided funding for that at the state level. So there are varying costs, but it is reasonable in terms of price, certainly for an individual to buy at the drugstore, particularly if you use the nasal spray.
Thank you. We have Nathan on the line from Beaver County. Nathan, what's your question?
Yeah, my concern is more about the prescription of the opioids and what is being done in regards to that. The personal experiences that I had broken my arms a few years back, and the first thing that was prescribed was oxycodone. I didn't fill that prescription, but because I was able to just use an aspirin or some other Tylenol-type drug that was an over-the-counter, and the reason I chose to do that was because I did not want to ever have oxy in my life or in my cabinet. You know, what are we doing to stop over-prescribing of drugs that may not be actually used, particularly when we hear that so many are being prescribed?
Thank you. Your question is a good one, and everybody sitting here in the studio, that's one that we could talk about for probably an hour or so. I can tell you, unfortunately, your experience is all too typical of what's happened in the past. Some of the things that are being done, we're going to try and change the continuing medical education requirements for doctors in Pennsylvania and require that they have training in pain management. I think that there is a recognition now that we need to cut down the length of prescriptions. There are some bills pending that would cut down the number of days that an opioid could be prescribed, especially for young people, for teenagers. So it's going to take a while, and I've told people repeatedly in conversations I've had that if we can make a dent in this problem in 10 years, I'll be happy. So I'll also pass this off to Dr. Falvo, because I know that she's heard the same thing.
Yes, and your question, again, is one that we're hearing over and over again. I had a tooth pulled, and I got a prescription, and broke an arm and got a prescription. Unfortunately, we have become a culture that expect to have no pain, immediate pain relief. And as a result, physicians have been taught that they must treat this pain, and that is what's gotten us into this cycle right now. As Senator Yaw has said, there is a lot being done with physicians as well as with nurses on assessing pain more accurately and how to treat that using some alternative methods. But thank you for that call.
We have Madeline on the line from Blair County. Madeline, what's your question?
It really wasn't a question. It was a statement. I feel that as wonderful as our teachers are and how much work they have to do, I know they have access to the kids all day long, well, as long as they're in class, and they're able to get their attention. I know they tell them how serious all these drugs are and what the results are of the drugs. They actually have more of a chance than we do to talk with these kids because they see them every day, and even if they don't want to listen, they still have to hear it. But I know they do their best. That's about it.
All right. Well, thank you for your comment, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the consensus is that what we've learned, especially in the 11 hearings that we've had, and there's probably about 65 hours worth of presentations, I think, on my website. We've learned that education is the key to this, and especially education of young people. And when I say young people, I mean starting in elementary school. We need to follow it up through middle school and then into high school. And Barry, do you have a comment about that?
Just a comment. I certainly think that in the school environment, teachers can be an influencing factor. But I also think that we as community citizens need to become involved as well. Faith-based organizations, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, parent-teacher organizations, I think all of us are seeing that this truly is a health crisis, and that any of us who come in touch with younger folks, sports teams, social groups, et cetera, we really do have an obligation to help educate our young people about this health crisis, and to help them make better informed decisions. So while the schools are critical and integral to solutions, the challenge, the opportunity, I don't think rests primarily with them. All of us really need to be engaged in that conversation.
And let's not forget the role that the parent has in this as well. You need to be a role model for your child. You can tell your child, don't do this or take this particular drug or drink alcohol, but then if you're not demonstrating that to them, they're not going to learn it. So be the role model for your children as well.
We have Jeremy on the line from Allegheny County. Jeremy?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and I appreciate the random phone call. This has actually been quite informative so far, and I appreciate it very much. I'm a service-connected disabled veteran. Who has dealt with chronic pain for going on 9 years. I have a brother who probably about a decade ago actually had a very serious drug problem right along the lines of that which we're speaking this evening. So I've seen sort of, you know, both ends of the spectrum. The question that I'm getting at here is I have had to spend over that 9 years, I'm currently not on opioid narcotics. That was a personal choice and a result of a discussion with my doctor. My brother, up in one day, he just decided, I'm done. I'm going to move out of the county for 6 months. I'm going to clean myself up, and that's it. I'm done. And being one of the most stubborn and strong-willed people that I know, he did it. To this day, so basically over the course of the last decade, he and I both continually have to spend a ridiculous amount of time justifying or proving to people that he did it on his own and me that I was never an addict. And there's a humongous stigma that is attached, especially once you've fallen under the arm of law enforcement. There is a stigma that is attached. It goes along with the lines of conversation from the woman earlier regarding, you know, you're branded a felon, you can't get a job. You know, has there been any discussion regarding educating people about the problem from that perspective?
Thank you for your question. And the answer, the short answer is yes, there has been discussion about it. What can be done with convictions, minor convictions, or even the drug convictions. And I think it all goes with recognizing that this is it's a disease that affects a lot of people. And we've heard from addicts that it's something that's virtually uncontrollable. From a physiological viewpoint. And I think that everybody is becoming a little more enlightened about it. That means prosecutors, law enforcement, judges, social workers. It's across the board. And but it's such a huge problem that I don't think that there's any one answer out there. So I don't know whether anybody else wants to comment about it, but that's what we found out, and that's what we've heard in the hours of presentations that we've had over the last 2.5 years. So thank you for your question. We have Charles on the line from Beaver County. Charles, what's your question?
Actually, I don't have a question. I have a statement.
Okay.
I've been taking pain medication, opioid pain medication, since 1993. In the 23 years that I've taken that medication, I've only had one increase, one. I don't have any drug problem. I don't have a problem with the law. I function normal like any other human being does in life. I think that people think that the medication is going to take away your pain. It's not to take away pain. It's to help you tolerate that pain. And I think that the people that get it try to abuse it. They want to get high, or they want to try to eliminate pain, and you can't do that. You can't eliminate the pain. So I think the education part of it should be that this medication is not going to get rid of your pain. It's just going to help you bear it.
All right. Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask Dr. Falvo if she can address that.
Yes, and you are a very good example of individuals who are taking opioids for controlling pain, making it more manageable, but do not become addicts. There is a difference between a dependency on a drug and an addiction to a drug. Individuals may need an opioid, and this is the individual who is dependent, for their activities of daily life. You're not able to drive a car or go to work because of the pain that you're in unless you take the medication. For those individuals that are addicted to the drug is not used for the control of pain. It's for the feeling of getting high, for that euphoric feeling that they have, and they're constantly chasing that. There is a lot of research that is being done in the physiology of addiction that differentiates between dependency or taking the pain medications for that particular need and the addiction. So thank you very much for that question.
If I can add to that, there's a parallel, and it deals with the issue of methadone as a treatment option for those with an addiction to opioids. Or heroin. Some people think that you're treating an addiction with an addiction. But there are people who are on methadone programs who can get back into community, can hold their jobs, be active parts of society, but they still, that's the treatment option and method that's working for them. And I think we need to recognize that. So for those who need pain management, it's a legitimate means for them to manage the pain that they're in and to remain active, viable people.
We have Donna on the line from Westmoreland County. Donna?
My question is, what is being done for people that are uninsured or underinsured that are on heroin or some other type of drug? What would like a three-day rehab do for them?
Yeah, thank you for your question. I know one of the things that's being done, the governor has started centers, what he calls centers of excellence across the state, and I think that they're focused on treating people who don't have insurance, and we're not sure how that's going to go at this point. I can tell you that also that we found out in all the hearings that we had that even the insured people, that the short-term rehab is probably, I guess, probably it's a waste of money, or it's not certainly not the best way to go. That treatment for especially rehab is an individualized thing, and it needs to be longer periods of time. So we're working on that. I know that there's some discussion in the legislature about what we can do with insurance. Like we said at the beginning of this program, this is a problem that affects everybody across the board and virtually everything that we do.
If I may, Donna, you're in Westmoreland County. You have a wonderful single county authority there. Colleen Hughes is the director. Barry has the information, but I would suggest that you start with them. If you need help or you know somebody that needs help, I would definitely contact them. Every county has an SCA. They're not for profit, or some of them are run by the counties, and they're designed to get you to the effect of the treatment that you need. They can do assessments and get you pointed in the right direction. So, Barry,
give her the phone number for Westmoreland County is 724-684-9000. And to Gene's point, all 67 counties are covered by a Segal County Authority agency that can get you into the system. And they do have funds provided to them to offset costs for those who don't have insurance and meet certain income guidelines. So they are really the gateway, if you will, into some type of counseling, assessment, and treatment follow-up.
We have an online question from Mary, which is the question is the prescription tracking database up and running and is it being used? Anybody, Barry, you want to, can you address
sure.
that?
Yes, the program is up and running. In fact, their office is right down the hall from the center's office in one of the state office buildings. So I know they're up and running. They have been up and running for a couple weeks now. It went live, I guess, almost about a month ago. And so it is operational for prescribers and dispensers so that they can check the system to see what meds have been prescribed and what meds are being dispensed for an individual. And there are call centers. There's a call center available for those to make inquiries from dispensers or providers about that.
We have Wanda on the line from Franklin County. Wanda, what's your comment or your question?
Well, I called earlier, and I think my question was misunderstood. My son had been into heroin in the 1990s and died three times, and we brought him back. And then he went to rehab, and then he had come back, and he had sons and was living. And back in the 2000s, they had this methadone clinic thing going on. And the one buddy he used to do drugs with was in a halfway house in York. And he come home for a weekend and brought 30-day supply of methadone from the clinic home with him. And my son took two, and the pathologist down in Quantico, who they sent him down to Virginia in Quantico to do his autopsy, said he died from 6 milligrams of methadone. Is the methadone clinic still going on? And I'm not done yet. Please let me say everything I want you to say. And secondly, no offense towards your nurse, but I gather she's never had a personal family member on heroin, and I appreciate that, and I hope you never do. One of the major things you can look for is, of course, the sleeping thing and the itching. They itch to death. They itch like there's no itch they can solve. And like I said, what is going on with, like, the methadone clinic and that thing? It used to be you went in every day and got your medication and whatever, and that's why my son died. And I tried to fight that 12 years ago. This Saturday will be 12 years since my son died. And I'm on your side. I know I sound belligerent. I apologize. I am on your side. I think it's great that finally someone's standing up and checking these things out. And the other thing I would like to say is I can take you down to Baltimore where my son went 12 years ago and find people and whatever. I know you have narc squads and undercover cops. You can't tell me you can't find the people that's doing it because I can go down to where my son was today. 12 years ago, I picked him up a couple times, and, well, 14 years ago now, I guess, but down in Baltimore, I can find those people. Why is it that we can't stop this?
We understand. A couple of comments. First of all, the way drugs are distributed today by dealers is much, much different than what it used to be. As I said early in the program, the really sophisticated marketing techniques, they're more like pizza deliveries now, unfortunately, in a lot of cases. And you also made the comment about Dr. Falvo. I think that you're probably extremely mistaken because I know that she has had, unfortunately, some personal experience. Dr. Falvo?
Yes, and that's I did have a family member who used heroin and did beat it. You are correct about the symptom of the skin being so itchy, but that isn't with all of the heroin addicts. Some of them, though, do experience that and to the point where their skin will bleed. And I also wanted to comment on the methadone question that you had. Again, I think methadone is still being used as one of the medications for medication-assisted treatment. The controls at these methadone clinics have improved. I'm not saying that there aren't individuals who are still able to get the methadone out, and those who have week-long prescriptions may use it or sell it to others. But there are controls in place. Some of the other medications that are used to assist addicts with their addiction have a little more safeguards than methadone, but you are correct that things have improved somewhat, but still need to be improved more. So thank you so much for that.
We have John on the line from Blair County. John, what's your question?
Could I ask two questions, please? The first is, I had a grandson that was in rehabilitation, and he went into one of the places, and the night before he got left out, he said he hurt his leg. They took him to the dispensary, dropped him off, let him have a phone, and call me when you get back, or when you're ready to come back. Number two, in Massachusetts now, you know, here in Pennsylvania, after you're 18, you can't tell a child what to do. In Massachusetts, they have had a law since 1971. If you have a child over 18 and they're not acting right and you want to do whatever you have to do with them, you can take them to the hospital. And I'm hoping my friends from Mr. Eichelberger and some of those other politicians would pass laws to do the same thing here in Pennsylvania, because my grandson was that way. It was his way or the highway. If I had the authority to take him and make him do it, I could have maybe saved his life, but it didn't. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your questions and comments. Somebody want to?
I understand your frustration. I've heard it from other individuals too. That I guess what you're getting at is, you know, how do you access treatment for somebody that really needs it? And you know, I tell people, you know, check in with your local Naranon Society. They have meetings locally. Nancy, you got some stuff.
Yeah. For your loss. I think it's demonstrating how many of you are calling in and are telling us that you have had a family member who has been affected by this and what it's done to your family. There are some things in Pennsylvania that you can do for an involuntary admission or commitment. But you really have to demonstrate that the individual would be a harm to themselves or others. And that's one thing to keep in mind. If you believe that something that an individual is going to do to hurt himself or to hurt someone else, you can get that treatment for them. Unfortunately, right now, that's where we are. We've had this discussion earlier about what's going on in some of the other states and things that we will look into. Thank you.
We have John on the line from Huntington County. John, what's your question?
Thanks for letting me participate. My question is for myself and other average citizens like I am, what's the number one thing that we can do to help alleviate this terrible epidemic? I've heard all kinds of suggestions, you know, about doing this, doing that, but what would be the number one thing in your estimation that we could do to help alleviate this situation?
Well, thank you. Boy, that's a great question. That's a loaded question, too, and I'm going to start around with Barry Dang from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. What do you think?
First of all, I think, unfortunately, there still is significant stigma about this disease. Too many people think that people use opioids or become addicted to heroin by total choice. And we have heard people say, well, if they've done this to themselves, why should tax dollars, why should government programs be there to help them? I think we have, all of us, have a major role in educating that this is a disease of the mind and the body. And when it takes over that mind and body, people's choices become very, very limited. So I think that education process needs to be involved. Most counties or communities are developing task forces to deal with certain issues, law enforcement, judicial treatment, but the whole arena of prevention and education, I think, is a great opportunity for John and Jane Doe citizen to become involved and to help educate and do things. And then within your own household is to truly lock up that medicine cabinet and make sure that if you have meds that have been prescribed to you, that you only have access to them. Or if an opioid, a pain pill has been prescribed for you and after a couple days it's not working for you and the doc writes you another script, get rid of that medication. There are medication drop boxes around the Commonwealth. Get it out of the house, get it into the hands of people who can destroy it and get rid of it so it's not used by other means.
Nancy, what's your comment?
And I would say that the one thing that you could do is participate. Come to the table. A lot of the things that Barry said are very good ways that an individual can work on this problem. We hear too often that individuals say, well, it doesn't affect me. It's someone else's problem. And we are finding more and more and more that it is every household, every neighborhood, every community, every church. So come to the table. There will be numerous ways that you will be able to help with the problem.
I'll ask the district attorney, too. Well, they stole a lot of my thunder, but just to follow up on what Barry said with the drugs, we're awash in prescription drugs in this country. I mean, everybody has this stuff in their medicine cabinets. People are looking for it. It drives a lot of crime. One of the things I would like to let people know is that the DEA is having a take-back. They do this twice a year. This Saturday from 10 to 2 is the next take-back day. There's locations throughout the Commonwealth. You can go to the DEA website, and it will let you know where various locations are. We're going to be putting out a press release tomorrow regarding Washington County, which doesn't help you, unfortunately. But be involved, be active, and make sure you're informed about what's going on would be what I would say. For my comment, this is Senator Yaw. I think that education is the key. That's where we have to start. And if I had to pick one area, and literally there are hundreds of areas that need to be addressed, but if I had to pick one, it would be education, because I think that we have to change the way young people or the next generation thinks about opioids and drug addiction. We have John on the line from Lawrence County. John, what's your question?
Well, first of all, I want to thank everybody there, ladies and gentlemen, for bringing this type of a venue to our phones. And usually I get these calls and I don't participate in anything. But
well,
as you know, in Lawrence,
participating.
Well, in Lawrence County, I'm sure you're well aware that it's epidemic type problems that we have here. And I would say to the lawmakers that are out there listening to get some things on the books for that'll help a little bit with like Florida has done with having a drug test if you're collecting welfare or living in government housing. If you're living there, you shouldn't be able to live there if you are, whether if you're smoking marijuana or doing pills or whatever that is against the law, have it some way where it's policed. For the DAs that are listening, enforce the laws that are on the books. We got laws everywhere. Put teeth in them. They put these people in the court system, and they turn them out. They're gone. You read about them going in. They make all these busts. The police department works crazy, and all they do is the judges turn them loose and enforce what's out there. But one of my questions is that here in Lawrence County, it's a proven fact that one of the corridors that we're in runs out of Detroit, Michigan, comes down through here. What are we doing on a state-by-state level to work with other state officials to police it or do it or work with the other states? We know where they're coming from. They're living here. They're doing that, and they're going back. And every time there's a shooting or every time there's something big, it's out of Detroit. So, I mean, we got to cut the head off. And is there anything that we are doing with other states? And that's my big question.
All right. Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask the District Attorney Vitone to answer that.
Yeah, you're in a similar situation as we are in Washington County because we're so close to the border. We're drawing from Ohio, West Virginia, Michigan, all over the place. And we have an interstate corridor, two of them that run through our county that are frequently supply lines for drug trafficking. One of the things we did a couple years ago, and I thank U.S. Attorney David Hickton for this, is we've established a relationship with the federal authorities. You're exactly right. Our sentencing structure isn't designed right now to put these people away for a long time in state court. So it was necessary for us to develop that relationship with the federal authorities so that, one, we would have access to the resources, and all the law enforcement partners are talking to each other and that communication's going on, but also to take advantage of some of the more severe penalties that are available in the federal system. So Lawrence County is included in the Western District of Pennsylvania. That's something we've been working on pretty hard. We have a fusion center to gather information on overdoses and drug events that's relatively new. So it's an evolving plan, but it has yielded good results so far.
Thank you. We have Michael on the line from Allegheny County. Michael?
Hello. I'm 12 years old. Me and my mom are listening.
Okay.
I would like to know why there isn't enough emphasis in schools on the drug problems. We learned some, but not a lot.
Okay. Thanks for your question. I think that one of the comments that's been made tonight is that we need to do a lot more in schools, and I think that education is an absolute key. Barry?
Sure. I do think there are means for schools. Phys ed, health education, we're all hearing about healthy lifestyles and healthy choices. So I think the issue of drugs and using drugs can be built into those curricula to help people make much smarter decisions about healthier lifestyles. But as I said to an earlier call, I think schools are an integral partner in this issue, but they can't be seen as the only one or the primary one. I think you'd hear from schools that would say, we're very concerned about this, but we have so much on our plate that we have to address and deal with, and that's one of the challenges. That being said, we heard from a number of school districts throughout the 11 hearings around the state where they really are taking hold of this situation and doing some innovative things. And if somebody wants to call the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, I will follow up and give you the names of those school districts where the superintendents and the school boards have become pretty actively involved in trying to do some programming.
Dr. Fallow.
And Michael, that was a very good question. And if your school is not doing a lot on drug education, take it upon yourself to incorporate that. You have a science project that's due, and investigate pain and pain control and how your peers in your classroom control pain if they're injured. When you're in health class, when you're in gym class, ask those questions. It will take students like you who are willing to step forward and ask the question to get those answers for the other students.
Yeah, and ask your parents to help, too. The next, we have Diana on the phone from Fulton County. Diana?
I presently work as a registered nurse with a home health agency that serves both Franklin and Fulton County. What can we do to help with this in the home setting?
Thank you. Dr. Fallow.
Diana, some of the things for nurses to do, again, begin by observing. Look at the patient that you're seeing in their home and situation with their family. Is there any evidence of any drug abuse that's there? Are you finding methods to assist the patients with controlling the pain? Are you up to speed on what is the best way to assess pain in a patient? So I think those are just a few things to be looking at the environment of the patient, keeping in close contact with their physician and with their family, assessing the behaviors of the patient and their family members, and monitoring the drugs that are in the home as well. If you see that there is a prescription that has been discontinued, find a way to dispose of it and not leave it in the home for others.
We have Paul on the line from Beaver County. Paul, what's your question?
I have a couple questions. My son is a heroin addict, and he's currently incarcerated, so he's detoxed. But in order to get people, and I'll just start with before he got into jail, I tried to get him to the detox, and it's a horrendous wait to get anybody into detox. And then once they detox, where do they go? There's not enough halfway houses, three-quarter way houses, in order to have them get their feet back on the ground, learn some kind of a job or be maybe taught on what they could be doing, whether it's a laborer's job, whether it's something like Trosha down in North Carolina, where they put you into a movement program where you move goods. You start off as a laborer and you work up through management over a two-year program to give them something to work forward to. And if you have a felony or you have a drug charge, even if it's a misdemeanor, it's very hard to get a job. It's almost like a DUI. They don't want to take you because of insurance reasons. So our society is really blocking all these people out, and we're saying, what can we do? My son's incarcerated. He can't get any help in jail right now, and he's just sitting there. He's been in there for a year. Why aren't we working with the jails to bring these people on? You've got a bed. You've got some place for them. Why can't people go there and work with them and get them back on their feet? He's right up there sitting doing nothing but twiddling his thumbs. And I'm frustrated with the government and not using what's in front of them. You want to put them out in society and then they fail. Why not teach them why they're in jail before you release them? The other question is, why does it cost, and he's a heroin addict, why does it cost so much for a Vivitrol shot, which gives him a 30-day suppression of the opioids on his opiate nerves, and why does it cost $1,000 a shot if that's better than methadone? And the other thing is, I carry full insurance on him. I can't get any help because I pulled full insurance on him. I'm paying for it through UPMC, but unless he's on welfare or unless he's on state insurance, nobody wants to cover them. Nobody wants to take them on.
Thank you for your questions. You've hit on several things that we, once again, we could talk at length about them. We're learning about this, and I think that counties are learning what needs to be done to deal with people when they're in jail. If there is any benefit of jail, it forces a person to detox. And unfortunately, we need to plan, or, you know, the programs out there, what we like to refer to as a warm handoff when he gets out of prison, not just put him out on the street and to help them. That's the one comment. And the other is about the Vivitrol. My understanding is Vivitrol is much cheaper than that now. And you're right. A couple years ago, it was $1,000 a shot. But my understanding, it's now, I don't know, in the $600-$800 range, something like that, or maybe even less. But I'll ask Barry from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania for his comments about that.
Just to clarify one thing, I don't know that anybody says Vivitrol is a better option than methadone. I think what they're recognizing is that there are multiple options of treatment for individuals based on their assessment. But the other thing is, and I think you said you're from Beaver County, is I would check with the Beaver County Single County Authority to see about treatment in prisons. I know there are some single county authorities that do provide or have treatment arrangements for county prisons, county lockups. So I would just suggest that you contact Kate Lowry at the Beaver County Single County Authority and check that option out about getting some treatment services.
Yeah, and Kate does a wonderful job. I know her. This is District Attorney Vitone. But one of the things that, and I'm not a treatment expert, but I've talked to them a great deal over the last couple of years, and I've had to learn a lot. An opiate addiction, a heroin addiction, Dr. Falvo can jump in. You're looking at a long, long-term recovery or treatment effort there that starts with detox, then 3 to 6 months, you know, inpatient residential to years of cognitive therapy and supports so that you learn how to handle the triggers combined with, in some situations, depending on the person, medication-assisted treatment. So it sounds like you need to have some sort of plan developed for your son in conjunction with your SCA. So I would suggest you touch base with Kate. Off the top of my head, I don't know if Beaver has a drug court. You can certainly investigate that through the court system. And, you know, I wish you well with his recovery.
We have Gina on the line from Washington County. Gina, what's your question?
Hi. I was just wondering, do you think that the use of both Narcan and methadone contributes to the heroin epidemic?
thank you for your question. I'll answer that, I think. First of all, Narcan is not like methadone. Methadone is a drug that takes the place of heroin, but or an opioid. But the person can function and be a functional member of society with the proper controlled methadone use. Narcan is strictly an antidote to revive people. And, you know, we kind of have a saying around, and I've heard this many, many times, this is not mine, in order to treat somebody, they first have to be alive. So, you know, the idea of bringing them back, you know, it affects all of us. And the problem is that we've learned it affects all socioeconomic groups, all ages. It could be your parents, it could be your kids, it could be your brothers, sisters, or whatever, and that's the problem. And it does not discriminate, and unfortunately, I know in my particular district, the most likely candidate for a drug overdose is a white male in his 40s. So unfortunately, you know, it's not, we need to save the people, first of all. So anybody else wants to comment?
Well, we've heard from some folks that said, you know, is it right if you revive somebody with Narcan and a week later they're revived again with Narcan and a week after that they're revived with Narcan? Isn't Narcan then, in a way, continuing their addiction? And I would say no. And I would offer that if somebody has a cardiac arrest and they're revived, but they don't change their eating habits or their exercise and they have another heart attack, we don't say, well, you've been revived once, we're not going to do it again. And it gets back to the earlier comments that were rendered tonight about this being a disease. And it truly is. It affects the mind and the body. And therefore, people do relapse. They fall back into old ways because of the physical and mental addiction that is in place. And so Narcan is necessary to keep them alive. We heard from a young woman at one of a public meeting that was held about a month ago. She's been revived 11 times with Narcan. She is in recovery. She's been in recovery now for over a year, and she goes out and now talks to young people and others about the dangers of addiction and how you can overcome it. If she was not revived those 11 times and brought back, she obviously could not be in recovery today and doing the job that she's now doing to address this issue.
And I would just like to add, you know, no one grows up and says, I'd like to be a heroin addict. The things that are causing the addiction are the overuse of prescription medications. We know that. We know that heroin is cheap and that individuals who can no longer afford or have a way to get those prescription medications, whether it's legal or illegal, then turn to heroin. Methadone is a treatment for a heroin addiction, and it's not a cause of the addiction, it's a treatment. It's for individuals who are addicts, and what it does is decrease the cravings. It's very different than our earlier caller who asked about Vivitrol, which actually blocks the effects of any opioids. Methadone decreases the cravings. Narcan, on the other hand, is a medication that's used in an emergency situation for an overdose. The individual has stopped breathing, their heart has stopped, they have had so much of the heroin or other opioids in their system that their body shuts down. And Narcan is similar to doing CPR on an individual in that it reverses that. It isn't a treatment for an addiction, only for the overdose.
23 million people are in recovery in the United States. Dead people don't recover. So you have to. I just don't know how you couldn't try to save a life if you had the opportunity.
And I'd like just like to make one comment about Narcan, too. I know the majority of the school district, well, all the school districts in my home county are carrying Narcan through the school nurses in the schools. And I think that's become standard practice anymore in the high schools, unfortunately, but that's where we are. We have Barry on the line from Blair County. Barry, what's your question?
Yes, I have a couple questions, but I'd like to Say I've been in law enforcement for 28 years, 18 of the 28 in crime, and I'm proud to say I was one of the officers informing me, Blair County Law Enforcement Association. And I've heard the talk, and I agree with so many people, but I think you're really forgetting the cause at the beginning of it. And if I just may say from the beginning, I can go back to Miranda. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I'm against Miranda. A good investigator knows how to take care of that. But during the course of my investigation, so on, I worked with school counselors, and so many times we went into schools, and the counselor would call him down, and Johnny would confess to the crime, notify the parents, they would come down, they agreed to make restitution, and not even it was handled within the department. Now, I know that's hard to believe, but with that in mind, what has happened, we need the help of the teachers. They're the second line, and the teachers have helped us so many times. Now, to go on farther, why does a person have to be his name placed in a newspaper when he's arrested for a crime of this nature? Why can't they be, when they're proven guilty in a court of law, okay? Secondly, the follow-up to that is, why not start a program where if a kid gets in trouble, let's face it, between 18 and 25, we'll say, is a dangerous age. If a person behaves themselves for 2 years, like in a drug-related crime or something of that nature, a misdemeanor, forgive him for that crime. Write it off. Let the kid get a fresh start. If it's for a felony, if it's a nonviolent thing, 5 years, forgive it, and let him have a fresh start. And of course, if they repeat, then that's their problem. But we need to give them some help and incentive to get back into society. Look at the people coming in from Mexico and different countries. They come in with felony records, and they're putting people that don't have records out of business, out of a job. I think it's time we think about the beginning, and police are your friends. It's been that way as long as I have known it.
Thank you for your comments. I think that there's no question. I mean, your comments are well taken. I think though that one of the things that a theme is that kind of we've heard tonight is it's somebody else is the problem, or it's a problem. It's their problem or them. And I think it's interesting that you were in law enforcement, because one of the incidents that I'm familiar with that just happened within the last month is there was a police officer in Johnstown that overdosed. And so when I say, or we said here tonight, that nobody is immune, we mean nobody is immune from this problem. And that's why we try to get a cross-section of people to talk about the various issues that we have. Barry, do you have any comments?
No, I agree. It's just going to take a whole new paradigm of how we look at this and how we rightfully decriminalize some of our ways of dealing with those who have committed sometimes in order to support their habit, separating them clearly from those who are dealers strictly in it for the business. But unfortunately, and history has it, that oftentimes people addicted will commit some crimes to support their habit. And I think that's why drug courts and other efforts within the criminal justice system are taking a totally new look at how we deal with these individuals and get them back into society.
Thank you. We have Rose on the line from Westmoreland County. Rose, what's your question?
Well, I just think this is wonderful. I have had occasion to have my husband addicted to Vicodin, being that he had surgery that was really rough, and his orthopedic guy would wean him down, and they had all kind of information telling him, if you use up what you got, you can't call the doctor's office and get more. So we got done with the orthopedic man and went to the PCP, which he said would take over weaning him down. Well, as he kept saying he was hurting, the PCP increased to the point where he got almost 100 a month, and they changed the law. You had to go to the doctor to get the prescription. Well, a lot of good that did. He walks in, they hand the prescription, and out he goes, $20-some, and you get 100 Vicodin. To get him weaned off, I kept stopping in and saying, this isn't good. Can't you tell him, well, you know, this month you're going to get 80 and stuff like that, and isn't there a pain clinic, something we can try? I mean, this is a 70-year-old man. He said to me, well, if I don't give him to him, he'll go somewhere else. Now, this is a doctor, and I know another doctor that also did it to my sister-in-law, hand the prescription over. These are 70-year-old people. I just am amazed that they have a mindset to just keep handing them out because someone's older and is hurting. You know, I just can't understand it. You've answered a lot of wonderful questions. I have another one about getting them into rehab. If you'd, like the lady said before, no insurance, your work, the person's working, but he doesn't have good insurance. I called 6 or 7 different places. If you don't have insurance, you don't get it. And 30 days isn't going to do anybody any good. So
no.
I just hope that some laws can get through. That seems to be a big problem.
Yeah, thank you for your question. I will try and answer that. I think that it sounds to me like you ran into a pill mill. But I think that we're taking a look at it, and with the prescription registry now, that's in effect, and the continuing medical education that we intend to make mandatory, I think that there will be some changes. You're going to see changes like this. But if you heard what I said, I think that we're looking at a long-term problem here. We're looking at 10 years at least down the road to accomplish some of these things. And anybody else want to join in?
Rose, I just, this is District Attorney Vitone. We just had a conference on Saturday. We spoke to about 50 physicians at Washington Hospital. They're very interested in doing the right thing. The Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs has put out guidelines for physicians, as has the CDC. So they're interested in learning about this. They need to be educated. So it's going to be a slow process, but they are interested. So that gave me hope when I had those people there. And again, as far as treatment, I can't emphasize enough, find out who your single county authority is and get in touch with them, because they are basically a one-stop shop to find out information on treatment and get you started on the right path.
Thank you. Unfortunately, it looks like our time is up, and this has been a terrific discussion. I certainly hope that all of the participants and those who joined in picked up a little bit of information that's helpful to them. I would like to thank our special guests this evening, Barry Denk of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, Dr. Nancy Falvo from Clarion University, and Eugene Vitone, the Washington County District Attorney. Also, I want to thank our sponsors this evening, Senator John Eichelberger, Senator Guy Rushenthaler, Senator Camara Bartolotta, Senator Pat Stefano, Senator Elder Vogel, Senator Kim Ward, and Senator Randy Volokovich. Thank you to everyone who listened in this evening and to those who shared opinions and asked questions. If you have any remaining questions or concerns regarding the issue of heroin and opioid addiction, I encourage you to remain on the line, to leave a message, and someone will follow up with you, or visit our website at www.acommonwealthcrisis.com. This website is a great tool to assist Pennsylvanians to talk and learn about the ever-growing heroin and opioid crisis, which is taking the lives of our citizens every day. Thank you again for your participation. and have a great evening.